gonna go back to 20.
First one real.
Well, we're gonna go to the fence and stuff.
Okay.
Where is that one? So,
28.
Plus 31.
20. That's right. Very good. Thank you. All right, we're gonna take items 28 and 29 together.
Okay.
Together.
Together, please.
Yeah.
Item number 28 from the county executive, providing an informational report outlining a proposed course of action to resolve the pension buy-in, buy-back issue. This item has also been referred to the Pension Study Commission. It is informational only and thus otherwise directed by the committee. Item number 29 from the Pension Board of the Employees Retirement System of the County of Milwaukee, requesting authorization to amend Section 201.24, subsections 8.17, 11.1, 11.11, and 12.4 of the Milwaukee County Code of General Ordinances to be compliant with ERS's operation and administration and to prospectively eliminate purchases of service credit and optional membership in ERS. This item has also been referred to the Pension Study Commission.
Thank you. I think what I'd like to do is start with the Buck report, and maybe Mr. Attorney Grady could give us a little bit of how we got here in terms of item 29 having come to us from the Pension Board, and then we're going to get into the executive's proposal. And item 28, but I just want to go back a little bit first to get the so we're all on the same page with how we got to today and the new information.
Mr. Chairman, Mark Grady, Deputy Corporation Counsel, we've done a number of reports about the history of this, and so I could probably talk for a long time. I'll try to do it in a nutshell, and obviously, if you have questions, we can fill those in. We've been calling these the buy-in, buy-back, purchase of service issues, and that's because they're really two different kinds of purchases. What we refer to as buybacks are purchases that were done pursuant to county ordinance. The existing ordinance that was passed back in the 50s, I don't know the exact year, back in the 50s, and it basically said that people at that time who were making contributions to their membership accounts, because at that time the system was contributory system, when they left employment, if they decided to go work for somebody else or leave the county for whatever reason, they could take that money out and take it with them. But if they then returned back to county employment, they could put the money back in and restore the service, buy back the service that they had previously rendered to the county in the pension system. There's an interest factor, et cetera. That ordinance, as I said, has been on the books for more than, 50 years. The ordinance went through some minor changes, but essentially the issue we're dealing with respect to those buybacks is that the ordinance said you were supposed to repurchase that time, redeposit the money within 2 years of returning to county employment. And the errors associated with that are that the retirement office over the years from, I don't know, for a long time, decades, in selected situations allowed people to buy them back more than 2 years after they returned to employment. So somebody returned to employment and then didn't buy the time back for 5 years or 10 years or however long. And so that's the buyback situation. Buy-ins are a different kind of purchase of service. The county ordinance has always allowed the pension board, since the very beginning, the authority to decide who's a mandatory member of the pension system and who's an optional member of the pension system. And from back in the 30s or 40s, the pension board said, I'm going to generalize now, normal employees are mandatory members. People like seasonals and interns and people like that are not mandatory members. They're optional members. And therefore, the construct, if you will, of the ordinance is that if you're an optional member, you get to exercise the option. And you get to say, I want to be in the system, pay some money to be in the system every year, and stay in the system, into the big retirement system. Back in about 1990, the county, because of a change in federal law, created the OBRA pension system, and that OBRA pension system was designed for people who before that had no pension system. They were optional employees, and if they didn't opt into ERS, they didn't have a pension, and they also didn't have Social Security. But nothing changed in the ordinance governing the main retirement system, so that option still continued to exist. So what happened then, I think the contemplation of the ordinance was people would make that decision when they started their employment, either every season or every year. Whenever they started that optional employment, they'd make a decision. They'd fill out a form, and they'd fill it out, and you'd make that decision sort of prospectively. But what happened beginning in the late 1980s, around 88 or 89, first one individual and then subsequently more individuals came into the pension board and said, I provided optional service as a seasonal or an intern back sometime in the past. Nobody told me when I did that I had the option. And so I would like you, pension board, to give me that option to make that purchase retroactively. And the pension board at that time in 88 or 89 said, okay, we'll let you make that purchase retroactively. An issue, there was a court case right around 1990 that was basically a court fight over what the proper interest rate was to be charged on those. And as a result of that court case, a notice went out effectively countywide in 1991 telling people that what the appropriate interest rate would be and that they had this chance to make purchases of optional service. And so a lot of purchases came in following that 1991 notice, hundreds. And so over time, more and more people made purchases, particularly in the 1990s, of this optional service. It could be service in the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, you know, any time prior. It could be 3 months, it could be 6 months, it could be 6 years. Whatever they had to purchase, they made the purchase. What happened then in the later 90s, and I would say the later 90s, was a discussion about how these purchases were being done and the fact that it turned out, it was discovered through review, that people were being allowed to use things other than cash, in particular their 457 deferred compensation money. Individuals have stated that they asked the retirement office, could they use that money? They were told by the retirement office that they could. It turns out that IRS regulations would allow that, but only if the pension plan says that you can, and our pension plan doesn't say that. So that one of the ordinance amendments that's in front of you is an ordinance amendment to say it's okay to use deferred compensation money, 457, 401k type money, to make the purchase rather than cash. So that's one of the errors that was discovered and is one of the things that's in front of you. Another error that was discovered, the pension plan eventually adopted a rule, it's Rule 207, that laid out some of these things, not all of these things. But typically the practice developed that they gave people 4 years to make the payments, an installment plan, for lack of a better word. You didn't have to make it over 4 years, but you had the option. And there's nothing wrong with that. But what happened is some people didn't want to wait the 4 years, and they wanted to make it all in one lump sum. And so they did that, and the retirement office let them do that, but didn't notice or didn't realize, didn't monitor the fact that when some people did that, they exceeded an IRS code provision that says when you make a purchase, which is an addition to your membership account, that addition cannot exceed 25% of the compensation that you earned that year. So if somebody was told, you can make a purchase, it's $10,000, you can pay $2,500 for 4 years, or you can pay $10,000 today, and they paid $10,000, if they happened to make less than $40,000 that year, they're in violation of that 25% limit. So that's the next error that was discovered and is contained within the ordinance amendments to retroactively allow a fix to that. The specific fix is not set forth in the ordinance because we are not yet certain what the IRS will allow as the method of that fix. Mr. Huff can talk about that more later. He's had conversations with the agent. But so that's the second error. I think that's all of the three primary errors that were involved. We had discussions at the pension board back in, well, Mr. Huff had discussions back in the late 90s before I was involved with the pension board. And then beginning in around 2003, was when I personally became involved, and we began discussing the fact that these errors existed, what are we going to do, et cetera. And in 2005, the pension board passed an amendment to the rule saying we're going to sunset purchases for these optionals. I mean, the buybacks are still allowed by ordinance technically right now, Practically speaking, people didn't have membership accounts from 1971 to 2011, so there really weren't contributions, and so it really practically nobody can do a buyback anymore, but it's still on the books in the ordinances. But on the optionals, the buy-ins, the pension board then passed a rule in 2005 saying that as of January 1st, 2007, we're no longer going to allow people to exercise the option. So if you're going to do it now. And so they got another batch, if you will, some number of purchases in 05 and 06. But since 2007, no purchases have been allowed by the pension board. In 2007, the county filed under the voluntary correction plan with the IRS. Basically, it's a self-reporting mechanism. In order to avoid an audit from the IRS, you self-report errors to the IRS. And so the county gave power of attorney to Mr. Huff on behalf of the county to self-report errors in this purchase program that I've just talked about. There were other more what I would call routine errors that were also reported and added to that, but the one we're talking about today is that one. And so in 2007, that's what was reported to the IRS. The filing with the IRS said, we propose two alternate correction methods. One is ordinance amendments that would retroactively cure the errors and allow the purchases that were made in violation of either the ordinance or IRS rules to be fixed. And the other alternative correction method is we don't do that, and we take back all the benefits related to the purchases from everybody who has made a purchase, both prospectively and then retroactively collect back the overpayments that, that people received. And so we didn't propose one or the other. I mean, we proposed both, but didn't express a preference for one or the other. That languished for, well, it's languished till today, frankly, but a couple years we made a deliberate strategic decision not to take a lot of action on that because of the pendency of the Mercer case. Subsequent to that, at least I can only speak for myself, I was hoping for direction from the IRS, that they would tell us which one they preferred, but that never happened. The IRS agent has become more interested in the last year as this has come up again, and he is more active in trying to get this resolved now. But he has clearly expressed, and Mr. Huff can repeat this, that the county as a whole make a policy decision, which method you want. And that will lead to the county exec's third proposal, which is a more recent proposal. It's not contained in the VCP at the moment, but it would be another alternative to that filing. And I don't want to steal Rise's thunder, but basically that would be a proposal to adjust benefits going forward, to take away the portion of the benefit that is related to the purchase of service. So, for example, if somebody purchased 2 years of service, their pension would be reduced by that amount with the multiplier. And it would also affect anything else that was a consequence of that. So if when people made these purchases, it moved their membership dates. So if they made they started regular employment here in 1993 and they made a purchase back to 1981, and if they still worked here after 2001, then they became eligible by moving their membership date pre-1982 for the 25% final average salary bonus. Now, at the time they made the purchase, they didn't know that was coming, but it eventually happened and they got it. Some people made purchases, and a consequence of that was they moved their membership date prior to 1994 and were able to get health insurance where they wouldn't have otherwise been able to. And you've been given statistics on some of those kinds of things. And there are a few people, again, those are in the statistics, who, because of their purchase, were able to get to 10 years of vesting, or they were able to get to a date when only 6 years was required. If you take the purchase away, they don't have the sufficient years for vesting, and they lose their pension entirely. That's a small subset, but there are some of those. And so where you are today is a choice for the county as a whole to make. You know, do you want to do the ordinance amendments and allow these purchases to go through, or do you not? And do you pick one of the two other alternatives, either a complete take-back, which I don't think anybody's actually proposing right now, or this blended, we're going to adjust benefits going forward, but we're going to forgive the past overpayments. We're not going to try to collect them back from members, which is the county exec's proposal. One last thing, and then I'll turn it over for questions. I don't have exact figures. Maybe Ms. Ninneman does, but I've been told that there are 300-plus people who made these kinds of purchases who don't have any errors. And so their purchases have gone through. They're going to get their benefits with the purchases. There's nothing the board or the county can do about those. Those are proper under the ordinances, proper under the IRS code, and they will get to keep those purchases. What you're dealing with here is another 217 or 230 people who have these errors related to their purchases. So with that, I'll stop. I've been talking quite a bit. So.
Going to, following sort of when this reignited in last April, then the pension board met in May. So what? How did the ordinance changes that the pension board took up, how were those created and explored? The pension board's recommendation started there. Can you tell us how that progressed? And
well,
or perhaps Attorney Huff?
Sure. And just real briefly, and then I will, if Steve can come to the table maybe. Originally, and you may recall, the county board did pass some ordinance amendments last June, if I remember right, earlier in 14. Originally, all of these were all put together in one package. And Steve Huff and I discussed it and realized that that made it more complicated than necessary. And so they were eventually separated out into what we called last year the mandatory ordinance amendments, the ordinance amendments to ERS that we believed were required by law and that, frankly, the county did not really have a choice about. And so those were the ones that the county board passed last June. Those county amendments had a byproduct of actually fixing nine people's benefits, but only nine. And so then secondly, we have this package that's before you today, which is what we call the discretionary amendments, because they are within the discretion of policymakers to adopt or not adopt. And the pension board originally had those in front of them, recommended their adoption to the county board in April or May, I don't remember the exact date. We, at that time, didn't have the actuary's report, which was received in July, that is in the file. There are actually two reports received in July that are in the file. When we received the actuary's report, discussions with Mr. Huff and I, we realized that basically he wanted to change the language of the ordinance. It still accomplishes the exact same thing, but the language, the way in which it's written, has changed. And so we went back to the pension board in October, I believe, or November, and asked the pension board again to adopt or recommend the set that is actually in front of you today. And so what you have in front of you today is the set, the second revised set, if you will. The objective or the purpose has never changed. It's just the wording changed. And the pension board then recommended them to the board. On that point, I would just say that, you know, the pension board's job is different than yours or different than the county execs. You know, they're the administrators. And so for them, I think it's an easier decision for them because at the time, number one, they didn't know about the county exec's proposal because that's more recent, so they weren't aware of that. It was a choice between the take-backs of all benefits or the ordinance amendments. And clearly from an administrative standpoint, allowing the purchases to continue as they've been recognized, practically speaking, all along, is easier administratively. We don't have to go back and reprogram computers. We don't have to go back and recollect benefits. We don't have to go back and start lawsuits against people to collect back excess payments, et cetera, et cetera. So from an administrative standpoint, this is an easier thing for the pension board to do. That's a different question than what the county board and the county exec face, which is a much bigger policy question about, for lack of a better word, the right thing to do. But these are come to you with the recommendation from the pension board. So,
if Mr. Huff could come to the table, did Corp Counsel or outside counsel make a recommendation to the pension board, you've drafted these at their request, or you drafted them and suggested them or recommended them to the pension board?
The DCP has the two alternatives, and so at some point the actual amendments had to be drafted for the second alternative, and so I would say it's in compliance with that VCP. Maybe if you remember, I don't remember whether we had a request or we were just doing it, you know, as part of doing our job, I think. But
no, I think Mark has expressed it well.
Make sure you get a mic, because otherwise we won't hear you.
What was before the pension board was something much different than you face today.
Good to know how to operate
the red light.
Red light needs to be on.
And it's not.
Push it again. We're good.
Thank you. Much different question faced them. And the alternative of not going after people who have been paid an amount that would have been improper if the ordinances weren't amended wasn't before the pension board in May when they first took this issue up. And as Mr. Grady said, they were faced with the question of how do we get this plan back in compliance with the Internal Revenue Code, which is the process that's been ongoing, and how do we administer this plan in a way that we're not facing lawsuits at every turn. So their calculus was that it would be better of the two options, adopting ordinance amendments or not adopting ordinance amendments, to request that the ordinance amendments be adopted. But that's really the extent of their thought on it, and it's now a policy question of, with another option on the table, which is the best approach in the interests of Milwaukee County.
Supervisor, ma'am.
Thank you. Mr. Hub, when the pension board took this up their policy,
that's in front of us at the present moment, they have their options. But their options will say, hey, we're going to buy guns. Did it hurt the pension fund? One. Because they already established that these individuals had that. Am I correct?
The actuary has determined that the calculations were made based upon these being valid pensions. So it's been funded along the way, assuming those are valid pensions.
Okay. And two, do the pension board still stand by their recommendations to the county board?
As Mr. Grady said, it was reconsidered by the pension board later, and I think neither he nor I can remember whether that was October or November. And came to the same conclusion and added two more proposed amendments, one being to permanently remove buybacks and permanently remove buy-ins from the ordinances.
Oh, so they want this to be expanded so it will not happen anymore. And that's in front of us right now.
Right.
Thank you.
Correct.
And is which items in front of us right now?
28 and 29. 29 are the recommendation, are the changes recommended by the pension board.
Mr. Chairman, I will move on item 29 from the pension board. Am I correct? 29
correct.
Pension board?
Yes.
Move adoption.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, if I could just clarify the last comment. The pension board did recommend this packet of ordinance amendments to you, as Mr. Huff said, and I believe it was October meeting, with the permanent removal of purchases in the future. But I do want to state that the pension board did not have the county exec's proposal because it wasn't formulated at that point in time, so they've never weighed in on the county exec's proposal.
Mr. Chairman, the pension board normally, and Mr. Huff, if you can correct me, they only deal with what was in front of them because they are the stewards of that money. And that their responsibility is to charge to make sure everything is proper. They really do not take into consideration any political arm, the county board or the county exec. And that is what the pension board, my understanding of the pension board. Am I correct, sir?
I would say you are correct, Supervisor. Having been a member of the pension board, you know that they are fiduciaries of the fund and fiduciaries to the members.
All right, thank you.
The recommendation comes to I know the original vote was unanimous among those voting. Was the second vote to recommend also?
I think it was 6-0 with one abstention.
The original was 7-0 with one abstention from what I read in the minutes.
We have one member of the pension board who's potentially affected just
right,
by the abstention.
Was the abstention.
Who's the member?
Vera Westfall.
Oh, yeah. Oh, really?
Deputy Director of the Zoo.
Okay. I think I'd like to hear from the actuary, from Buck Consultants, on what the new information is in the file.
Are you asking about the county exec's proposal and the new information related to that, or are you?
Well, we haven't had.
Mr. Langer did reports back in July on the pension board's ordinance amendments, and then he's more recently done some related to the county exec's proposal, item 28. So I'm just trying to get clarification on the question.
I'm sorry. I think I'd first like to hear the pension board's the what's in front of it. What's the recommendations on the ordinance adjustments? Okay, so that, summarize that again.
Can we went through this last month?
Yeah. So the July 7th letter, and some of you may recall, we went through this last month at
I think a similar meeting, right? So July 7, 2014 letter entitled VCP Ordinance Amendments for the Buy and Buyback Program for the County of Milwaukee Employees Retirement System, Preliminary Actuarial Analysis. We did an analysis of this buy and buyback issue. A couple of things, you sit back and you say, well, this is a preliminary actuarial analysis. Why is this preliminary? You know, ideally for this type of analysis, ideally, but ideal doesn't always happen.
Yeah.
We would have information for each of the affected members based upon with the purchase of service and without the purchase of service. We don't have that yet. We're closing in on it. But instead, we can make really good estimates with regard to what the impact would be by making adjustments to the benefits that will get us in roughly the same place in the analysis. So the background summary on page one of the letter, there's 214 members who purchased service under the ERS but would not have been able to do so under the provisions that were in place at that time. So most of these folks have already commenced benefits. We have some schedules on that a little bit later in the report. And in addition to that, with regard to these people, when for purposes of the actual evaluation, we, for putting a price tag on the pension fund, when we get information that says, hey, this person has additional service in their records, that's when we recognize the buy and buyback service. And in addition, their member, the contributions made by the member, that additional money being in the fund, that's when we reflect this. So along the you know, this stuff is not reflected when a member enters into the retirement system, but it's reflected as they purchase the service. So these purchases, and this is something that's a little different, you know, this analysis, these folks already have these services baked in, and the analysis is what would happen if we remove the service. All right? So if and removing the services would result if the county did not elect to adopt the proposed ordinance amendments that Mr. Grady went through and effectively, as we put it, turn back the clock. So what would happen? The ERS would repay the contributions by these members back to the membership. That's step one. Step two, any overpayments that were made, and overpayments meaning additional benefits as a result of the additional service. Not only because the benefit's larger because of more service, but also some of these folks were able to collect a little bit earlier because their retirement eligibility could have moved up as a result of the purchase of service. And then three, not just the past benefits, but three is talks about the future payment of benefits. So we went through, you know, the methodology for purposes of doing this. You know, we are still working on developing the actual amounts. So this is all based on estimates, but roughly the numbers shown here, I don't anticipate them changing drastically. Drastically meaning, you know, by a few million, which sounds like a big number. I recognize that, but we're talking about amounts that are tens of millions of dollars as opposed to millions. So the real final numbers could be different. Effect on contributions on page two of our letter. So if, you know, the net effect of not adopting these amendments is a decrease in the contribution. And remember, the county and the members share in the contribution requirements. Right now it's roughly in the realm of two-thirds is borne by the county and one-third is borne collectively by the membership. So these amounts, the 2015 budget contribution you see there a little bit further down on the page of $38.3 million, that's the amount based upon the January 1, 2014 valuation that we presented back at the beginning of last summer. If we remove this service buyback, the contribution reduces to $36.6 million for a net overall change of a reduction in contribution of $1.7 million. But we've got it broken down into a couple of pieces. One piece called the normal cost. Normal cost, cost of benefits accruing during the year. Reality is most of these folks are retired, so there's not many of them accruing future benefits, so there's not much of an impact there. Most of the impact is what we call this net amortization payment. You have unfunded liability within the pension fund. You know, unfunded liability, you know, we have a funding target out there that we call the actual accrued liability, and we can compare that to the assets of the fund. And at the moment, you're short in the amount of money in the fund. Very routine. I always caution whenever I say something like that. The vast majority of retirement systems in the United States have some sort of shortfall, and many of them are working to pay it off, just like you guys are doing here at the county. So that unfunded liability, or the cost of benefits that should be funded already, that reduces a little bit because under this proposal, you are you're going to collect benefits that have already been paid out, and you're going to reduce benefits in the future, and then offset by the amounts you pay out. The three things I outlined earlier.
Is he talking about 28 or 29? Which one? There are two different scenarios.
Just to be clear, this was July, so this was the original.
This is the July letter I walked through last month, I believe.
This is if you want to see it.
Okay. Yep.
It
was sent out by the department.
But this is not the pension board recommendation. That's why. Because I thought we were talking about the pension. I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. I thought we were talking about pension board recommendation. So you just going to give us the chronicle of what happened. Pension board came up.
Background and the numbers. And yep.
I want to make sure I'm still on the same place.
His letter.
Understood.
Yeah, I saw the letter. It came to the pension.
Okay. So the payments towards the unfunded liability reduces a little bit as a result. And in the end, the overall reduction in contribution for that first year is $1.7 million. And that reduction goes on for years. The amortization payment reduction goes on for, there's a policy right now to extend that over a 30-year period, according to the ordinance. That covers page two. Page three, we get into lots of wonderful detail in terms of the breakdown of all these numbers. I feel compelled to go to the bottom of the page first. And those three elements that I spoke about in terms of if you don't adopt the ordinance amendments, at the bottom of the page, that return of past overpayments with interest, that is an amount of $25.8 million. That would be a $25.8 million reduction in your unfunded liability. The reduction in future payments amounts to about $10.3 million. And again, another reduction in the unfunded liability. And the return of the service purchase amounts, that's an outflow from the pension fund, that'd be an increase in the unfunded liability. The net impact is a reduction of $26.8 million in unfunded liability of the fund. And that's what drives that reduction of $26.8 million is what drives the $1.7 million reduction in your contribution from that we saw on the prior page. The breakdown of all the elements is shown up top. And, you know, I think the primary takeaway with regard to this is that vast majority of these folks, all the members, affected members, other than 24 active members and 6 terminated vested members, are folks that are in receipt or folks that were in receipt and have died. I think that's the highlights of page 3. I could go into the discussion of the components of each of the members on page 4 if that's the pleasure of the supervisors. Certainly can. We got lots of voice today.
Okay, so I guess I'm trying to make sure everyone's up to speed in terms of sort of what changed from last month. So last month we didn't have county executives' hybrid approach. If you could summarize what that, so we have an updated letter on that as well, right?
Yep.
And essentially what we're comparing, the first letter was what the effect would be if we tried to go back and do what the exec originally proposed, which was collect everything backward plus cut payments going forward.
Right. And refund the money. All three elements of that plan.
That was right. The original. Then what came from the pension board was the ordinance changes. And there you've said that there's essentially no actuarial impact because it's all been planned for. It's already in the system or anticipated in the system, and so we've been contributing based on these all being legitimate. So the ordinance changes, by making them legitimate, would have no actuarial impact.
That's correct. If the ordinance amendments are adopted, the impact on the valuation is nothing. All the people continue receiving the benefits as they have been, and there's no change in the liabilities and no changes in the contributions as a result.
Okay. And then in the third scenario, the county executive's more recent position, those savings are the result of cutting the benefits going forward. So those actuarial savings are the same as if we made any other adjustments to future payments. So if we cut the multiplier going forward, we'd have savings as we did previously.
Right, yes. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, and that everyone has this letter. Yeah.
Can you help us so we can follow you?
I'm trying to frame it.
He's asking
sure
good questions.
Jump in if you have a question, Supervisor Mayoff, feel free. I just want to make sure everyone has the progression of how we got here, because the last time you were here, county executive was apparently still on the position that we were going to collect everything, including from those who were deceased. So,
Chairman, do you mind if I talk about the county executive's proposal first?
You can in a moment. I just want to get a couple more background things out if we can.
Thank you.
I guess I'd like to talk to Attorney Huff, if we could, just about I want some background foundational stuff on the table.
Yeah, I appreciate the way you're asking questions. Keep going.
Attorney Grady was talking about the original buyback provisions being an ordinance from the 50s. Some have described this as some unusual scheme that we have here at the county, but that doesn't seem to be the case. Is this a normal type of provision for a pension system to have buyback provisions? Is there something unusual about our system?
I wouldn't say it's unusual to have provisions where if a member takes an account they established by contributing, leaves and comes back and pays that back, they get their service back. That's not unusual.
Okay. And then the IRS code includes, allows transactions, many of the transactions, including the 457, use of 457 money. So the fact that our ordinance didn't, or our plan did not include that, was not in, it was not as permissible as what the IRS allows. Is that accurate?
Right. Yeah, the Internal Revenue Service allows also the concept of members and government plans, for example, buying some membership credit in order to get more credit. In fact, they have something they call airtime, where you can buy time that you didn't even work. In some instances, if the ordinances allow that. And so what was missing here was not that the 457 plan couldn't be used, is that the plan that was receiving it didn't say it could be received and used. So it was just missing the amendment that's here.
Okay. Supervisor Mann?
So in other words, Mr. Huff, it's not the employee's fault that they did not know that they could use their 457 plan. It's because the administration did not change the ordinance or come forth and say, we need to change the ordinance so we can use a 457 plan to buy back those elements. Is that what you're telling me?
Well, Supervisor, I haven't looked at every file, but there are certainly people who say they didn't realize they couldn't use the money.
I just wanted to jump in and caution. One thing we haven't started talking about yet is the fact that we have litigation pending, and I don't think in a public record you want to be having your attorney make a statement like that.
I withdraw my question right now until we go into closed session.
Wow. All right. We're going to have to walk a fine line, but I think there's a lot that can be said in open session. Supervisor Schmidt.
Well, right. And if we're doing background and bringing us up to speed, we went through a lot of this last month. I asked some questions last month, and maybe I can re-ask a couple of them and see if we're in the same situation. So let me just speak to it and try to remember the questions I asked, and I got most of the answers, and I see if they're the same ones. Now, first of all, I thought we're talking about, you know, at all these $26 million that we could recoup. I thought last month when I asked that, or it was put in maybe Mr. Grady's report even, that over $20 million of that $26 million are beyond the statute of limitations. So we're not like we're talking, I guess, 6 years is the standard for statute of limitations, 6-7 years. But many of these are well beyond. I mean, I've talked to retirees 18-20 years ago, and of course, as we were discussing today and discussing last month, I mean, they didn't even know. I mean, this is before the backdrop. And at the end of 1999-2000 era. So they didn't even know about this. Some became beneficiaries of it, of course, but many and several I talked to, as a matter of fact, did not take the backdrop. So they're, you know, this is a big, you know, animal here, and they didn't even take that. And indeed, even Mr. Umhofer's report following up from last month's conversation said that, and I talked to one pensioner, and he said, if indeed this was followed up, okay, and we didn't pass any ordinances, he would lose his entire pension. And there are situations in the journal article, you know, even said that there are situations where people who have pensions would lose the entire thing. Okay, so what I'm asking is that still a true statement to make that. You know, we got this grand idea. We're going to save the taxpayers. We're going to recoup, you know, $26 million plus. There's not even any hope to get back $20 million. That because well beyond the state. And by the way, not everything could be blamed on the board. Always has been. Always will be. I'm sure. Okay. Board had nothing to do with this. We asked. Now, the 2007 is a key year here, as we've talked about, which stopped the buy-ins. And we asked, and that was documented in Mr. Umhofer's article too. By the way, it said the board did ask to get some kind of answers on the questions we're asking today. IRS, for whatever reason, and this is administration who made all these decisions, by the way, not the county board for once, huh? Okay. And so these people were given advice and followed advice from their, you know, the people who they're supposed to be asking advice from. And we're talking about also, you know, we go back to the other situation, fiduciary benefits, and how do you take that back once promised, once given. So question one again then, and I'm finishing up, and that is, so $20 million can't be recouped. Now, we can't talk about litigation, I understand that, but we're going to have litigation, and we have litigation already, that's going to challenge the other couple million dollars that we have left. It's pie in the sky to think that we have litigation already. That's a fact, okay. And these are administrative mistakes. It's without question. These are only people only here because of errors, okay. The last 217 now or whatever. You can write off some of those people because they've been retired a long time, been retired before the pension enhancements, so you know they weren't part of that. So that's my two questions, okay. Can I have some follow-up on that if we're okay in that area?
Mr. Chairman, I think, first of all, it is correct that it would be very difficult to recover a substantial portion of the past overpayments. But I would say that the county executive's proposal doesn't seek to do that anymore. The pension board doesn't do that, obviously, with the amendments, and the county executive is no longer. So right now there's nobody proposing to go back and collect back past benefits. And so the real question is, going forward, are you going to take away those purchases of service credits and reduce those benefits to the $10.3 or $9.3 million worth, or are you going to pass the ordinance amendments to allow those benefits to continue to be paid? With respect to litigation, yes, we do have litigation. We have one lawsuit filed a while back last year in federal court. It seeks class action status. It has not yet been certified as a class action, but it seeks class action status on behalf of all of these individuals, the 200 and some individuals. It's brought on one named person right now. But and there's a second lawsuit that's been filed in state court that relates to five individuals only. And this amendment that was passed out relates to their situation, so I'll save that for later, I think. They're amongst the so-called ineligibles. And so, and then we also, yesterday I found out the Deputy Sheriff's Union has filed a grievance over the same subject as well, and they're going to be trying to pursue grievance arbitration over these purchases as well, or the denial of purchases. And so we have litigation on a variety of fronts pending related to these matters. I'm not sure if that's answered all the questions or not.
Well, you know, I'm sure any other questions about litigation that we'd have to take in closed session, so I'm done now. Thank you.
Supervisor Jersey.
Thank you. And I think the litigation is an important issue. Was the litigation commenced basically after the county executive's letter? Is that when the litigation started?
Chronologically, yes, but that's not quite why it happened. The main plaintiff was an individual who was not allowed to use his purchase of service when he wanted to retire. He wanted to retire. He needed the time he had purchased, roughly 6 years, I think. Ms. Nineman knows this better. She talked to him multiple times, but in order to use the Rule of 75. And the decision was made, I think Ms. Nineman, as the manager, said, you know, these purchases are in question. I'm not going to allow you to use them to retire. And so he left. He resigned. He didn't retire. And then he is the lead plaintiff in the lawsuit. So that actually came about a month or a few weeks before the letter went out.
All right. But in a way, I could exclude him because he basically did not rely on our advice. He made a decision independently. And that's where I get concerned about. All of the other individuals, excluding that one, basically relied on information the county gave them and are, in fact, retired. So they changed position in reliance on information they received. And my question is, with this chart, and this is the July chart that Mr. Langer was referring to, if we adopt the county executive's position going forward, is it the $1.7 million per year? Is that the cost?
No, it's the, Mr. Langer can speak to this. It's a more recent report. I don't know the date on it, January 27th or 28th.
Because the chart talks about contribution without the service buyback.
It's the $1.7 million was the July report. That report is sort of a perfect world report, assuming you take back all the benefits going forward, assume you collect back every nickel from the past,
okay,
and make the refunds a purchase.
And I can't translate that into this question.
No, because nobody's proposing that right now. Nobody's proposing to go back and collect back past benefits. So the more recent report says $600,000 reduction or reduced contributions from eliminating the benefits prospectively. And Mr. Langer can talk to you.
Right. Yeah, so there's a January 28th letter, and instead of taking all three components from the July 7th letter, the only component that we take from the July 7th letter is the portion that relates to future benefits to be paid, which we have, you know, the reduction in future benefits of $10.3 million, which is the second component at the bottom of page 3. So if we only take that component, the January 28th letter on page 2 takes only that component into consideration, and the result is the contribution in the, not only do you have a reduction of $10.3 million in the unfunded liability, but the contribution impact in the first year is a reduction of $600
million.
$600 million is like in another state. Thank you. $38.3 million down to $37.7 is $600,000. Thank you. Yeah, let's make that really clear. $600,000. $600 million. Yeah, $600,000 would be the reduction in the first year. And then over the course of time, in today's dollars, it would be a reduction in contribution of $10.3 million spread out over 30 years.
Okay. I think I followed that. And I'll tell you, this is tough stuff. I mean, it is very specific. a lot of fact-driven, you know, if this and if this and if this is true, then this. So I'm trying to follow it. This is not my bailiwick. I'll be the first to admit that. And the information that we were given, some of it yesterday for the first time, and I tried to keep up with it, but it was daunting to say the least. But part of the problem I have, and I guess we need to hear from Dr. Colton, but the Pension Review Board made a recommendation. They're the fiduciaries of the fund, which has a specific meaning. They are the ones who are charged with the duty of protecting that fund, and they've made a recommendation. Then we have the county exec's letter going out, and all of a sudden the litigation starts, with the exception of that one, which I would take out of this. And we haven't even put into this formula the potential liabilities with regard to the fees. And that's the question. Where are we going to be paying these fees from? Is this covered through insurance, or is this potentially out of pocket? And what is that cost going to look like?
Mr. Chairman, with respect to the Pension Board has insurance. It has a $150,000 self-insured retention. Reinhart is the national counsel for the pension firm, and so they're defending the lawsuit on behalf of the Pension Board. So the first $150,000 comes out of the pension fund. After that, it should be covered by the insurance company after that. On the county side, the county is insured through the mutual. The mutual is providing a defense through the mutual, through Leonard Marzak, Al Levy, who's defended most of these pension cases for the last 15 years. And his defense costs are paid by the mutual. Now, we can debate about whether that's really county money or not, but his defense costs are paid by the mutual. And I don't know what his total fees would be if we kick the litigation all the way through the end and appeals and everything else. It certainly would be six figures, whether it's, you know, $150,000 or $650,000, I don't know. But it's too early to say at this point.
But is it a fair conclusion, based on what you just said, that this committee probably doesn't have to figure a number in there for coverage of attorney fees because it's potentially covered? I think that's what I'm concluding.
The only caveat I would say to that is that I've had other supervisors say that the mutual's money is effectively the county's money, and so that's – I don't want to get into that argument. But
and that's the $150,000.
No, that's the – $150,000 is the pension board side. The county side is attorney levy.
The deductible.
Okay, so there is some liability there.
Depending on what you believe about whether that money is coming out of a reserve fund or is coming out of the taxpayers' money.
Mr. Chairman, could we hear from Dr. Colton? I mean,
yes.
I guess we should get that point of view.
Yeah, just on that last point, though. So we have a deductible where we deposit money against which they draw it.
Right.
The Bilda case, which was the last time we had a pension lawsuit, in the minutes, I thought I saw the pension board, they considered that exposure, and that their defense costs on that were $1 million.
Mr. Huff could probably answer this better, but the total defense costs were over $1 million, but I can't tell you as I sit here what the division was between the pension system and the county, but the total defense costs were $1.25 million, I think.
Supervisor Mayo, did you have something?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Gray, are you telling me now, because you know this is not the county board or the county execs. So in other words, who had to tell the pension board to go sue? And will that be the county exec, or you are requesting that the county board to tell the pension board to go say, well, we want you to go sue these individuals and get the lawsuit going? Because the pension board already gave us recommendations to do something. So are we going to ask them, will they go and take this money and sue those individuals and take their homes, and so they lose their homes and lose their pension? Are you telling? So I want to know who's going to make that decision to tell the pension board, who are the fiduciary people responsible for that pension, who came, told us already what they want done, to go sue. I need to know that one. Because I don't want they've been saying, because this is not about the county board, because sometimes the journal sitting up, I'm sorry, you said no there. This is the county board versus the county exec. No, this is not. This is about doing the right thing, and the pension board already spoken. So explain that to me.
Mr. Chairman, first of all, no one, as I understand it, no one is proposing a policy that would involve suing pensioners for benefits they've already received. The pension board has proposed a policy, which is adoption of the amendments, which it's expected that the IRS will approve. Whatever happens here needs IRS approval, but it's expected the IRS would approve it, and that would allow the benefits to continue, so there would not be any lawsuits other than perhaps some related to the so-called ineligibles, which we haven't talked about, the up to 14 people. Under the county exec's proposal, there would also not be a lawsuit. All that would happen would be the pension system would change benefits prospectively. So if someone was getting a $1,000 a month pension and their purchase of service was 100 of that, in the future they would receive $900 instead. And so, because that would be the policy going forward. It'll depend on what the county board and the county exec together decide, whether it's through, you know, joint agreement or whether it's through veto overrides or whether it's through inaction. In some fashion, there will eventually be a policy of the county established by the policymakers, and that's what the pension board will follow.
And who are the policy makers of the county?
It's the 16 supervisors and the county executive.
County executive set policy from Milwaukee County?
I think in this
situation. You're at 14, yes.
The short answer is I think is yes.
Okay.
Certainly in this situation.
Just to clarify that, though, you said no litigation in the case of the county exec's proposal, but you meant that we would not initiate litigation.
Right. The pension board would not be suing anyone. We're getting sued, but we would not be going out and suing people.
Okay. All right. I think, Ms. Colton, if you could tell us how the position of the executive has how he's arrived at his new proposal as outlined in his more recent letter.
Thank you, Chairman and Supervisors, for the opportunity to present this to you today. I first would like to acknowledge that this is a difficult situation for everyone involved. It's obviously very complex, as we've been learning over the last few months. We want to work with you to figure out a way to resolve this as quickly as we can. Once we found out about this in approximately April or May, we kind of went on a journey of trying to dig through the history of what happened and look at options for going forward. We spent a significant amount of time talking to the different stakeholders involved, from Corporation Counsel to our actuary to the IRS agent to ERS. We considered many different angles in looking at the various options, from the legal risks from various angles to the impact on employees and on retirees, and not only the employees and retirees, the 200 that are impacted by this, but all the 11,800 beneficiaries of the pension system. We looked at the fiscal impact on both the county as a whole and on the pension fund specifically, and a realistic ability to recoup the funds that were set out in the 2007 resolution. We looked at what the current ordinances of the board are and what the board said they would like to pursue in 2007. So we took all these different things into consideration. And that's kind of part of the reason it took us a while to get to a proposal that we have in front of you today. The option we present here, we believe, is the best balance of all those factors. And I think you've already heard the general summary of it, but basically we're looking to set all future pension benefits for current and future retirees to a level that it would have been without this ineligible benefit. We would return any funds that were paid in by people who have not yet started receiving the benefit, and we would allow all past overpayments to stand. And we heard already from the actuary on the fiscal impact of this, approximately $10 million and $600,000 the first year. Our actuary is currently completing individual calculations, so we'll know more precisely the impact on every person. I think we should have that in the next few weeks. While we wish we could go back and prevent these mistakes from happening, unfortunately we have to deal with them in the present day in a way that leaves the county in the best position possible. We want to focus in the future on, once we get past this issue, on making sure mistakes like this don't happen again, and when they do, we can deal with them quickly. The county executive just encourages you to think when making the decision on this, which is a difficult one. So not just the 200 people impacted, which is an important consideration, but all the beneficiaries of the pension fund, the 11,800 other people who are part of the fund and would benefit from a healthier pension fund. And I'm happy to answer any questions.
She has questions.
Yeah, I mean, I heard that, but you know, the pension board is actually the fiduciary, and it's their requirement as a fiduciary to understand that the health of the fund. So, it really has already been determined from them apparently that the ordinance changes without that additional piece of changing, you know, the monthly benefits after people have taken advice, relied on the advice, changed position, and then we can expect to be sued if we go down this road, which then, you know, opens up that additional question. So the fiduciary piece of it, I mean, I really think there has been a decision made, and I'm not even sure the county exec is the fiduciary that makes the decision that you just concluded.
Chairman, supervisors, so I'm not exactly sure what the specific variables that the pension board took into account when they made their decision. I mean, we know from what we just heard that the fiduciary impact on the pension fund, and I think we, the supervisors and the county exec, have to also consider the impact on the county as a whole and the financial situation of the county, which this proposal has a positive one, in that we would be putting in $600,000 less into the pension fund. So I think there's the fiduciary responsibility to the pension fund, but I think there's a lot of other perspectives that need to be considered.
Chairman, if I could just follow up, in terms of the legal framework, the filing with the IRS is done by the County of Milwaukee because the County of Milwaukee is the plan sponsor. So it is the County of Milwaukee's responsibility to maintain compliance with the IRS. Now, obviously, the pension board does that on a day-to-day basis. The pension board has the same interest as fiduciaries in maintaining compliance. But it is the county, the plan sponsor, who is responsible. So, for example, had the county not filed the VCP plan, I believe that the IRS probably would have hit the county with an audit. The VCP filing prevented the IRS from doing an audit. It's a self-reporting in lieu of an audit. And as a consequence, the IRS also cannot impose penalties that they would normally impose in an audit. But it is ultimately the county, the plan sponsor, that has to decide what should the plan look like and how do we fix this problem. And so while it's true that the pension board members are the fiduciaries and have to look out for the best interests of the members of the pension fund, current members, retirees, et cetera, it's the county that has the IRS responsibility of maintaining the tax-qualified status. And so there's shared responsibility, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Of which we don't have an answer from the IRS. I mean, we're going to propose, this is what we're doing, IRS, now you bless it. We still don't have them saying we can do this, that, or the other thing, or even the county exec's proposal. We don't have an IRS opinion. So I'm hoping the answer is, because as an attorney I've dealt with the IRS, is you, in good faith, make a decision, try to be reasonable about it, submit it to the IRS and ask them to, you know, at least issue an exception letter that even though you may have violated something in the past, they will accept it now based on the fact that it was made in good faith, it was reasonable, and you're trying to correct the problem. That's what I think we're talking about here. Correct me if I'm wrong.
We
don't have
Chairman,
an answer on any of this from the IRS.
I think Mr. Huff probably can. He's had more conversations than any of us with this agent on this particular filing and on other filings for other clients, but that's what we're trying to get to, is what should Mr. Huff be telling the IRS agent? You know, should he be telling him, I mean, the IRS agent has expressed willingness to look at either of these options, willingness to look at amendments, plan amendments, because that is a fairly common fix, for lack of a better word. He's also expressed willingness, at least conceptually, to look at the county exec's proposal. He hasn't blessed either one, and he's not going to.
Well, let me ask this question.
Until after we make one of them.
Is he going to make the decision no matter what this board does, well, that's not reasonable because I think the county exec was more reasonable? Or are we all going to go to the IRS with one voice?
Well, only one. There can only be one policy.
Well,
and so
one moment. On that issue, the letter was issued to us as a informational and basically said you were proceeding. So has something been sent to the IRS already, or is something pending regardless of what we do?
Chairman, supervisors, no, nothing has been sent to date. We are working on drafting something. Again, we'd like to work with you. I think best case scenarios if we can all get on the same page about how to proceed to the IRS. So I guess that's what we're asking for is.
Okay. Well, I appreciate nothing's happened. I think it's bad form for you to proceed while the item is clearly under deliberation. Sorry, you can continue, and that we're going to go
this
way.
Thank you. I'm fine. I'll let others ask.
Supervisor Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Colton, I think I heard you say that for those who have not received benefits yet, the idea is to refund their purchase money so that $600,000 would not have to be added each year. Consequently, is it $10.3 million for 30 years? Is that what I'm understanding? Is that what you implied by for those who have not received any benefits up to now but did make purchases, did participate in buybacks? It's my understanding that these individuals did not knock on the IRS door, did not follow pension board members, and to convince them to say, well, we want to participate in this program. So because we want to participate in this program, whether it be through the 457 plan or for some other way of doing so, that these individuals did not force IRS personnel, pension board, anybody in this county board, in order to offer such a package or set of packages. As far as I can understand, these packages were offered to people, and there may have been a problem with respect to whether, as far as timing is concerned, whether something was done within a 90-day period, a two-year period, whatever the case may be. I'm just trying to understand what you mean by refunding those purchases for people who had an opportunity, like persons did 20 years ago, in order to participate either in the buy-in or buy-back program. So my question is, with respect to the 600, going forward, I think you're looking at not paying the $600,000 per year, and eventually over 30 years that could be $10 million. You want to refund or give back those monies that were purchased, those monies that were used to buy credit, I should say, for those individuals who have not received any benefits?
Chairman, supervisors, well, first of all, I think none of us were here back then, so we're not really sure what was offered and to whom and how that process went.
Well, those who received...
yes, you're right.
There's some record. There is some record as to how this came about, because again, we're talking about our ordinances. We're talking about people who had an opportunity to participate, to ask for to purchase credit either through buybacks or buy-in. So I'm only trying to understand what you want to do going forward, as far as those individuals who have not received benefits, although they may have paid thousands of dollars in order to get credit for their pension going forward.
Yes, so we would be refunding that with interest for...
With interest?
Yeah.
Okay.
And that was included in the calculations.
Okay, which is not the same as what the pension board... as the amendments that are before us with the next item, but I just want to understand. I just want to understand, given that people make good faith efforts in order to try to participate in the system to their advantage, but it was offered by somebody within Milwaukee County government for that to happen. I mean, that's my big problem, particularly since in 2007, 16 of supervisors voted unanimously to have the payment stopped. Well, in 2007. It didn't happen, and I understand that there was the Mercer case. I also understand there were extenuating circumstances as to why that didn't happen. I'm not blaming anybody right now. I just want to go forward. I just want to make sure that for the good faith that was exhibited by these pensioners or would-be pensioners, that that's honored. That's my case. That's why I asked the question going forward. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Supervisor Mayo.
Thank you. Dr. Cook, underneath your scenario, how many people would not get a pension, period?
Chairman.
You're asking the people to buy back, and you're going to send them the interest payments. How many people would not have a pension, period?
Chairman, supervisors, like I mentioned, we are in the process of doing calculations for individuals, and we will know that shortly. It will have every single person and how much their pension would be reduced.
But the reason why I have a concern about that, you sent us a premature letter down and stating that this is what you want to do. You say that you want to work together, and you don't have the facts. And that's a concern. I'm glad that Buck is helping you and trying to get you the right number. But we have information from the pension board in front of us, how that will affect the individual. Yesterday I was accused not being sympathetic to people. But I've been on ever since this happened, I've been very consistent about it. About if something that those individuals, those 300 people, or how many of those individuals, took the advice of not your administration, of the past HR, and they told them what they can do. And then all of a sudden now, 20 years later, some lady, some gentleman's in their 80s may not have a pension. And I'm just looking, it could be my mother. My father passed, so I can't talk about him. Or my aunt, who used to work for the county, would not have a pension. Unfortunately, she's not part of that. I'm so blessed. Would not have a pension. How can I consciously say to those individuals that was not their fault, that not this administration, the other administration in 2007, we say stop the payment so we know what's going on, that we can fix it. We got the pension board in front of us who's nonpartisan. They are not leaning county exec way or the county board way, gave us a suggestion how we can remedy this situation. And on top of that, it's not hurting the pension fund. I got a concern that I'm confused. That's all I need to say. And thank you for being here, and thank you for trying to give the county exec side of it. I appreciate it.
I was confused a little bit by that answer. You don't know how many people would lose their benefits entirely, or do you not know the effects on the general effects that this would have on those effects? I mean, you made a decision without understanding what it would do to people, or?
Chairman, supervisors.
Or do you just mean the specific dollar amounts you don't know?
Yeah, so we have the general numbers. That's the report I sent you yesterday on the general fiscal impact. The numbers on specific individuals we do not know yet. The reason we wanted to get this report to you when we did is because we understood that you wanted to take action. We wanted to have an alternate proposal in front of you, knowing that you might take some sort of action today or this cycle.
I got it. Attorney Bargren, the summary that I've received from you, from your office, that's not confidential, is that? Okay. Well, so in the interest of providing information, then, 12, these are the estimates, 12 people would lose their entire pension without the amendments. About nearly 30% would lose 20% or more of their pension. And more than 30% would lose between 10 and 20%. So, you know, just to put a little scale on the issue.
Well, I'm followed. No,
is this the memo he sent us Monday? Because it says confidential. That's why I didn't.
That's why I asked. Friday.
From Bargain. Oh, I didn't get Friday. Okay. I said Monday. Oh, well,
23rd. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a major subject that I went off on today, and we've talked about a lot. It's getting full information. We've had a problem with this a little bit in the budget, trying to get the right numbers. So, you know, you had a lot of this information, and here's when we talk about numbers, the problem in sending out the first letter then again is who we really after. I mean, there are some people who have really benefited. Most benefit without even knowing about it because these enhancements kicked in and they made the decisions in the 90s. Okay, so okay, there are a number of people who are, you know, really got enhanced here, but we're throwing everybody under the bus here. We've got you had numbers. I don't know why you won't give them to us. Okay, that you knew who would be affected, and the extent of people being affected. So I guess. I'm trying to get my hand around, you know, do we really look into this? Do we really look at what the real cost would be? I'll ask the legal question then, and maybe Mr. Huff can come up too on this if that's okay. And that is, you know, we talk about fiduciary responsibility. We talked about, you know, the topic we talk about is estoppel, right, which talks about, you know, if you're given advice and you take it with, you know, that you're getting advice that you can trust. So how do we go after people with estoppel? And once you're given these benefits, are they fiduciary benefits? So won't that be a legal argument that they can't be taken away? I guess that's one direct question I have.
I just wanted to caution. I think we're talking about two different things. Two different things that came from our office. One was just a summary of data, okay. And that's what was Supervisor Chairman Lipscomb was talking about.
Right.
You seem to be talking about a second memo that came from office on legal issues, and that's the
well,
part.
Well, both I talk.
Well, I understand, but the second part is the part we could talk about.
Right.
I think in generalities, but okay. I don't think we want to, in open session, get on assessments of strengths and weaknesses and who's going to win, who's going to lose.
Okay. And well, the last comment I guess I'd have is just, you know, and Buck is very valuable, and we need them, you know, and. We sent out a letter before we got Buck really involved in what it would be, and that's kind of important details here, okay? But what really stands out is in the Buck recommendations, too. You know, the legal question, without a question, is coming into this. It's coming into this already. And so we can talk about, you know, how much this costs it, but we're going to have no idea because Buck is not a legal counselor. They have no idea what future ramifications would be. So we're taking their statistics. Say, well, we save this much or lose this much or $600,000. But you know, we talked about $1 million of costs before already. And then you know what? Can we ever put this the rest of my lifetime? Can I go in peace to my grave sometime? Okay. We had this. I mean, in the middle of 2000s, I was. Personnel chair, okay, and we put to rest finally. I mean, right at the beginning, we took the sickly stuff, but we said future hires can no longer get these pension enhancements. I mean, Dama Umhofer, the journalist got, you know, when this happened, and I was very proud to do that because we had to cut the bleeding here. Okay, we couldn't, you know, we tried and we looked at cases and case law, and we couldn't go back and get. Okay, through administrative decision, it was their plan, by the way, and we got. You know, wrong information said it was cost neutral from our advisors, our actuaries. Wasn't Buck, okay? So I see a similarity here. You know, this is painful. I mean, there's some people who made out on this, okay? But what about all the people who are not going to make on this? But we're all in this together. And how do we do the individualized thing? Like, if they go through every case, then. We're going to get sued when we do it. In 2007, we tried to remedy this situation by saying, no more buying and buyback. I go back to that and say, well, this should be the problem solved then. You know, all these errors are found out now. So how do we make up for the errors? Okay, well, we got these legal things that make it very difficult for to go back to the errors. And most of the errors, frankly, are not worth going after compared to what the cost will be and, you know, the lives it has hurt already from many people who, and as attested by numbers you'd like to have already, really can't afford to take this hit. You know? So, you know, it's cleaner, it's easy, you know, to say the ordinances, you know, it's not going to hurt the fund. And, you know, yeah, I guess I'd be looking for a clean way out, but why wouldn't we look for a clean way out of this nightmare? It's a nightmare for all those individuals involved, okay? It was a nightmare for seven supervisors and myself and everything. I had to go through this, you know, and we took responsibility, but you know, a lot of health administration, it was all of, this is all administration stuff, okay? Everybody can make errors, but somehow we're supposed to fix all this now. And, you know, the reality, if I look back in the past, is we can't fix everything, okay? But we can hurt a lot of people. And we could put this to bed and just move on with our lives. And if we, you know, if we want to, you know, look forward with some confidence, people who work for the county, who have worked for the county, all of us who have, you know, like so many of you out there and people listening who have given their lives in the 90s and the 2000s, you know, to work to make the county better. We tried to, you know, it was a bad thing that happened. This was a bad thing, a lot of errors, okay? But, you know, we learn from errors. We get cleansed from errors. We don't throw everybody on the bus in errors. And somehow we got to move forward. And the ordinances is a clean way to do it. We don't hurt the you know, fiduciary system. We don't hurt the bottom line. We don't get everything that maybe we have a chance to get, but we just run over in the process. So maybe I went too far. I made a summary here a little bit, but that's the way I feel. Thank you,
Mr. Chairman.
Attorney Grady.
I hear people talking about legal issues, and I want to try and give you at least a summary of that. Without going too far, because I know you want to hear some of that. And I guess what I would say, first of all, is that, you know, we've heard people talk about relying on the staff. Supervisor Jurczyk talked about it. Supervisor Mayo talked about relying on the staff. Supervisor Johnson talked about it. That is precisely one of the primary theories in the lawsuit that's filed against us, is misrepresentation by the staff and reliance on that misrepresentation. And the question is whether that's a winning legal theory. And all I will say in open session is that it's not certain. There are cases out there where the courts have decided that you cannot prevent a government from enforcing the laws as written, no matter what hardship it imposes on somebody who relied on bad verbal advice. There's also cases out there that say, in some circumstances, a person can recover in those situations when they relied on advice. And it kind of depends on what the advice was about. And I don't want to get too much depth, but there are cases going both ways. And there are cases going both ways across the country. There are cases going both ways in Wisconsin. There's case law from the federal law, ERISA, which does not govern our plan, but often is something courts will look to, which will generally enforce policy provisions. But again, you can find exceptional cases where courts have gone the other way. And so it is not a clear black and white answer that I can give you on that, which is, because if it was black and white, I'd do it in open session. But it's not black and white. And so that's the fight that we will have with the lawsuit that is pending. If the ordinance amendments are not passed, we will have to fight that issue, and we'll have to try and demonstrate that the pension system in the county has the legal right to take away these benefits because they're contrary to the ordinances, regardless of how much reliance there was. That will be our job as counsel, not mine personally because we have outside counsel, but our counsel's job to make that argument. And obviously it'll be decided by a lower court, eventually by an appellate court, I'm sure. But the point is there clearly are strong arguments being made along the lines of what supervisors have suggested, that reliance element should allow them to recover in this situation. And we believe that there's law that would allow us to win in that situation, but I have to recognize there's law on the other side.
Supervisor Mayo.
But here's the point. I mean, it's going to be litigated, and we're going to be arguing. We're going to go through a long process, and one side or the other will sue again. Okay, so this is going to go on forever. okay? We know how these things drag out, a couple of years probably, okay? In the interim, we haven't answered all these questions. All these people are left on the line hanging. And my presumption is that each individual case, you'd have to go through, won't you have to dispose everybody? I mean, have them come in front of a lawyer and say, you know, and look at the process. What kind of advice were you given? When were you given? What were the circumstances? Did you understand? I mean, won't you have to go through every individual person, I would think? And then I'm going to say, after you argue that question back and forth, and then you go to, well, some courts have said yes, some courts have said no. You know, what's the right thing to do? Maybe we should ask that question, by the way, too. Okay, before legally going into everything, and then it's going to come down to a point, and I won't ask the question because I'm sure it's a close succession kind of thing about fiduciary responsibility. And once you give a benefit, how do you really take that back if you were given advice that you thought was correct or that you could take? You were offered these options, so that's what I kind of talked about before. But I don't need an answer right now. Thank you.
No, no, Mr. Chairman.
I hope so.
No, you never steal mine. Mr. Grady and Corporate Counsel, is it time for us to go in closed session? Because we are asking questions. You had your assistant just tell us that we're making one statement that we should not talk about. He let the other supervisor keep going and on and on. And in other words, I do not want to be on the hook about the things where we talk about, because you just stated that's part of somebody's case. I want to make sure that we talked about this. Everybody know what we're talking about right now. I think we, Mr. Chairman, I think we had a very good discussion in open session. Now it's time to get to the nitty gritty and go in closed session. Yeah, Mr. Corp Counsel, can you help me out?
Yeah, I think it would be good to go into closed session with any further discussion along the lines that we just had. There may be further questions about the Buck Report, or the proposals that we can certainly discuss in open session, but as to what might happen or might not happen, or what did happen back in the days when these were first session, those would be good questions before session.
All right. I think they would in specifics, but can we talk, particularly Attorney Huff, I guess I'd like to hear, just as on the... actuarial side, we sort of heard the contrast of the two proposals. From your perspective, can you tell us, and your experience, significant experience with pension plans and the IRS, can you characterize the ordinance changes, the likely reaction of the IRS to those ordinance changes versus the speculate at all on how you think the county exec's plan would be received by the IRS?
I think it's difficult to know with 100% certainty how each would play out through the IRS. And we're dealing with a base level agent, meaning that he would write up the closing agreement first, and then it would need to be approved at higher levels. And so just his opinion will not be the only opinion. But I think it's fair to say that you have before you two proposals that would be acceptable to the IRS in the final analysis. The IRS is going to be looking for whether there is a way to make the plan whole and a way to make the members whole throughout the process. And so they'd be looking at, is there someone who will pay into the system if money was taken out of the system that shouldn't have been? They'll be looking for corrections going forward if ordinances aren't changed to make those corrections. Mm-hmm. So I think you have the makings in either the ordinance amendments or the county executive's proposal for something that would be acceptable to the IRS.
So from your perspective, you don't see one as being an easier path relative to the IRS?
There are some parts that will be more difficult than others to get approval from the IRS on, but those are parts that will be as difficult in one plan or the other. So I don't see that one is more difficult than the other. Both are acceptable.
But their review, just as we sort of drew the distinction that the pension board's review looks at certain things and not others, the IRS's view also, it's about whether this meets their guidelines or their expectations for how the plan is fixed. They do not take into account sort of the these arguments of equitable and fair and in terms of the changes on
that's a very enlightened question, Supervisor. And that's something that in my last conversation with the agent, he said may in the future, but acknowledged not now, is something that they intend to look at taking into account in the future. So it may be that years from now they will have different regulations and procedures which do take that into account. As of now, they don't.
Interesting. Okay. All right. I would like to get our public comment before we would take up any motion to go into closed session. Are there other questions people would like to ask before we would take public comment? We have quite a list.
I heard Attorney Bargren, and he's advising us to go into closed session on all the equitable arguments and the promissory estoppel stuff, and that's fine. I'll accept that advice because I think we should discuss that further. But on the other side of the coin, and to me this is the other side of the coin, if we're not going to argue the equitable pieces, is we get down to the issue, if we're going to go the route of the county exec's letter and his recommendation, is that it almost requires you to start going person by person and say, how's this person affected? How's that person affected? What's going to happen to this person? And I start to question, and quite frankly, don't want to go there. I don't think it's my job as a county supervisor to start fashioning individual responses to individuals. And I also I'm questioning, isn't that actually an area that the board cannot get into? Special legislation for specific people, that is not policy making. I want to understand the policy issue here is to get a united, whether it's through agreement with the legislative branch and the county exec, that we go together and have the same opinion, or it's a veto override, that we're going to go to the IRS with a policy. We just heard Mr. Huff say both of them could be used to go to the IRS, and then the ordinance change. I think those are proper county policies that this committee can deal with. When you start asking me to go into how is this one person going to be affected? How is that one person going to be affected? I can tell you, I think all of us, including me, got calls from retired constituents. And I told every single one of them, I am not on the county board to represent you as an employee or as a retired employee. I am on the county board to represent my constituents, all 53,000 of them. And I'm going to reach a policy decision. And that's part of the problem I have with what the county exec's trying to do here, because it almost requires you to go individual by individual to see what the effect of what he would do. And I do not like the thought of even going there.
Mr. Chairman, I agree that this is a policy decision, not an individual by individual decision. And I don't think that's what the county exec is proposing either. As it stands now, it's a one or the other policy choice for you. You've got the ordinance amendments, which fixes pretty much everybody, or the county exec's proposal. But the county exec's proposal also treats everyone the same. It reduces the benefit associated with the purchase for every person in here, the 217 people. The effect, the dollar effect, is different on every person, but the policy decision is the same for everybody. And the IRS isn't going to let you make a decision, and Mr. Huff can jump in if he wants, as to, you know, we're going to give Ann Smith this, we're going to give Joe, you know, Miller this, or whatever. You're making a decision. You have to accept the fact that some percentage, a minority of the people affected, in addition to getting the purchase of service, got something else, a final salary bonus or whatever. The majority of people did not, and you have to factor that into, do you want to give it to all of them or take it away from all of them? I mean, it's there's no individualized decision to be made here under the policies that are proposed.
In all due respect, if we adopt what the pension board recommended, everyone does get treated the same, and the effect is the same. True?
everyone retains the benefits that they've been receiving or expected to receive.
If we go the way the county exec is recommending, that changes, and it is different.
It's the negative of that. It's, I mean,
then people get treated differently at the end result because they have different factual circumstances.
That's true, but they're being treated differently now. They have different factual circumstances now. They're getting different pension benefit levels now. So I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, I should be addressing the chair. I'm not sure I'm understanding the question because
you're being respectful. I'm not taking any umbrage to that.
Everyone's receiving the pension benefit that they were told they were going to get with this purchase of service included. So for some people, that's a very small increase in their pension, less than 10%. For some people, it's a very large increase in their pension. It's substantial. And the numbers that were shared with you give you some general perspective on that. And so whether it's talking about keeping those differing levels going forward or taking away those differing levels,
Mr. Chairman, here's where I think that thinking breaks down. People made a decision based on advice they got. In reliance on that, they made a decision. So whether they got a lot of money or a little money based on these buyback buy-ins, they made a decision and they agreed to it. So that's that circumstance. If we go with what the pension board is recommending, we don't have to go into that decision and question it. I do think when we get the decision that the county exec wants to make,
right,
then you get into all the equitable stuff, and that does come into play. So I really think there is a difference there. So thank you, Mr. Chairman. I won't push it anymore. But
Supervisor Johnson.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. To be respectful of all those who have come, I would follow your lead in having testimony occur at this time. I know that some want to go into closed session, but on the other hand, we can listen to the pensioners and family members, anyone who would be or is tangentially affected by this, and then go from there.
Mr. Chairman, let's not ask questions, please, because there are a lot of people. We have a lot to do yet, and could we please have a time frame? Yeah. I understand there's a lot of passionate, but we'll never get done otherwise.
Yeah, you get your answer.
Thank you.
Sounds good. All right, we've got a number of speakers. I'd ask you to keep it to 2 or 3 minutes and or less if you can, and try not to repeat what others have said. Just provide your statement. We're going to start with Dennis Hughes speaking in favor of the ordinance amendments. It'll be followed by Bruce Fisher speaking in favor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Board. I want to thank you after listening to this conversation. I really appreciate the thorough review of this issue and your questions. I think you've really gotten to the heart of the issue. I think you're really seeing that the county executive's plan and really his actions over the last 10 months have been to lie, to give misinformation, and to provide no information to these retirees. And in hearing the county executive's office, I was relieved to hear that the county executive wishes that he could go back and fix this, because that's exactly the opportunity that you have to go back and retroactively change these ordinances to put them in compliance and to have no one really affected negatively. So I'm excited about the opportunity for you to vote on that soon. I would just start by saying no offense, but the money that's been spent on this Buck report is about as useful as burning taxpayer money. Any amount of money that would result from cutting these retirees' pensions should not be considered savings to taxpayers. A vote for Abley's plan would be a vote for pension theft and a breach of hundreds of contracts. I don't see any taxpayers here that are demanding that you ruin these 200 people's retirements in order to give them a fraction of a penny back. I mean, who is actually calling for this? Abley's plan makes sense to no one, and it would really not have any support based on the conversations I've had with supervisors, so there's no chance of it actually getting passed. I think that points to the fact that it's a political plan to basically mitigate the fact that in April, right after he sent these letters, he went to the Journal Sentinel on April 23rd and said that he wanted every single penny back. That essentially means he wanted that $26 million back. He found out later, because he didn't have the facts in the first place, that he couldn't get $20 million of that $26 million. So when he said he wanted every dime, he didn't know what he was talking about, clearly. And so now he's got a new plan that he wants the Journal and everyone else to focus on. But really, he's been caught in a lie here. And so thank you all for pointing that out. I have just really quickly, my purpose here, and you guys are sick of hearing me talk, I'm sure. One of the retirees, she couldn't be here today. She called me after the last Finance Committee meeting, and I just really want you to hear what she said, because it just points to how every day that this goes on without a resolution, these people are being harmed. If even only the prospective cuts go forward, people would lose their homes, and they think every day that goes on that option is closer and closer to actually happening. When the county executive released his plan, there were retirees that don't understand the county board process that thought that they lost their pensions going forward, because they're not getting any information from the county executive or the pension fund, and you all are giving them as much information as you have, and thank you for doing it, but they're not getting any information from you all either, because you haven't had any information, and they understand that. And so thank you again for your hard work here, and I shudder to think what will happen next year when we have a part-time board that doesn't have the time to look at a complex issue like this. I mean, you would think that people would take the county executive's advice, would be more likely to take the county executive's advice, but in this situation, your thorough review has shown that the county executive has provided bad information to the county board and to the county and to these retirees. So thank you, and if you don't mind, just 30 seconds. 30 seconds.
Go quick.
Okay.
Hi, Dennis. Judy Coots calling. I'm just a nervous wreck over this whole thing. I was wondering if they addressed the pension deal yesterday. Didn't hear back from you, but this is just taking its toll with me. I can hardly wait any longer, but I know I'm going to have to. If you know anything, give me a call back, or just reassure me that I shouldn't worry or something. Thank you. Bye.
I get calls like this every day.
That
was Judy Coots. She spoke to you, I believe it was the May meeting. She was in a wheelchair. She said that if she's on a fixed income, over 70 years old, she'd lose her home if any changes are made to her pension. So I really hope the county executive, by going after these individuals and trying to individualize this, he's trying to go on a fishing expedition to find the one or two people that have really taken advantage of this program. But the great majority, over 99%, I'd say, of these people are just like Judy Coots and the people that are here. So I look forward to you guys hearing them, too.
Thank you. Bruce Fisher, hailing from the fabulous First District.
Oh, boy.
All right, I'm voting. I changed my pick. Withdraw my
vote. Welcome.
Hello. I'm in a unique position compared to the other members on the list. I retired with a disability, a small disability pension. And it's been very difficult. I had no plans in retiring till I was 65, and I had to retire in 2004 with multiple injuries, mostly back injuries. And since I last saw Mr. Grady in court, they found two more major injuries, work injuries. So trying to pay the bills and then hearing about this, paying all the medical bills and then hearing about this now, it's just shattering.
Thank you for providing your testimony. Thank you for coming down. Mike Pudo? I'm not sure. It's hard to read. Perhaps you can identify what district you're in. I can't quite read.
Okay. Thank you for hearing me today. I'm Mike Pavolo. I have 34 years in with the county, and I bought back 2.9 years. And when I went down to the retirement office, they said everything was going to be fine. I questioned them if there's going to be a problem with my buyback time. They said, absolutely not. You have the money, and you're good to go. Well, that's why I'm here today. And I'm worried about what's going to happen if I would lose my pension. And the only thing I can think in the back of my mind, could I get my job back and go back to work and earn my pension back to what I originally had? And that's what concerns me. I know it's been like 8-9 months now, and things are going on, and every day goes through my mind what's going to happen. And so I'm just concerned down the road as it's going to get solved. And so that's my feeling on it, and thank you for listening to me.
Thank you. Michelle Kennedy, followed by Margaret Gibbs.
Yeah, I'm Michelle Kennedy. I've been in the county since 1989. I retired in 2013. I was one of the people. $2,300 is what I took out of deferred comp. I was told I could by Jack Amarello, I believe that was his name. The rest, the other 7,000, I paid in cash. That was for 2.1 years. The reason I did is because my husband had a major stroke. I wanted to take care of him. I thought, if it comes down to the brass tacks, I may be able to get out just a year early. As far as the health care, I was getting health care. I didn't need it. I was just looking at that time. Well, I lost my husband, so it didn't work out to my advantage. My health is bad. I'm in stage 4 renal failure. So I had to leave the county as soon as I could, so I am grateful that I could buy it. I was told I could. I was going to actually take the money out in a loan to begin with, but I was assured by Jack, oh, no, this is totally legal. Just call them up. You fill out paperwork. They send the check to me. Everything's good. Oh, and then what upsets me the most, I'm sorry, I'm very nervous, is my pension. The last 2 years of my pension, I've paid into it. My pension was also cut from 2% to 1.6%, so okay. And then they got me with the furlough days. I was the lowest manager possible, so I was not in the union. And that took about $3,000 for each of my final years out. So my calculations really have dropped for my retirement. And that, which is probably of no concern, but what scares me most is I'm right on the cutting edge. I might be one of the 12 people. And like I said, I got out early. I'm glad I did buy my time so I could. The doctor was trying to get me to get out sooner. I told him I can't. And so thank you for listening to me.
Yeah. Thank you, Ms. Cannon. Yeah. Margaret Gibbs, followed by Ray Johan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and board members, for listening to me and my fellow workers today. We've heard a lot of testimony from a lot of experts on numbers and statistics, but this is the human face that we bring to it today. It affects people, affects me. I am currently working. I'm not a retired employee. However, what you consider today, it will still affect me greatly. I worked 7 years as a seasonal for the Parks Department before I was hired full-time. When I was hired full-time, my kind father said, Peggy, you'll be okay working for the county. You won't ever get rich, although I think there's a lot of people out there who think we are, but you'll never be poor. So when I received that letter from the Employee Retirement System saying that because of a lawsuit, I am being notified that I may purchase my pension service credit, he loaned me the money. One reason he did this for me is that he thought it was very important to have a secure retirement. So in return for the money that I gave to the pension system, I received 2 years of credit. So meanwhile, I just got to work, forgot about retiring. I work hard at my job. I'm a dedicated employee. I do the best I can every day for the citizens of Milwaukee County. So now, after about over 20 years working full-time in my seasonal time, I thought, you know, maybe a possibility of a time when I could retire. Of course, now here we are today. And I never did I think that I would be sitting here addressing you about this issue. When the ERS told me I could purchase my service credit, I believed them. What employee doesn't believe their employers when they offer you benefits? Who sitting in this room ever said to their employer when they signed those papers, is what you're offering me legal? I didn't. So, as what you said before, Supervisor Schmidt, we've been sitting here a long time about this. Employees have been villainized for receiving pensions. you sitting there on the board have been villainized for wanting to offer us pensions. And I'm not a villain. My coworkers aren't villains. You aren't villains. All we ever wanted to do was serve Milwaukee County. So, in the end, I ask you today to make the right decision for us and change those ordinances. Thank you.
Thank you. Ray Johan, followed by Steve Gazalka.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Ray Johan, and I retired in 2011, only because my job was abolished, and I was luckily and had enough time to retire with a pension, which is very meager, and I'm in the poverty of a pension. Now, I had the option of buying years of service, seasonal service, and unfortunately, I didn't buy 4 years. I went year by year. And I was allowed by check, deferred comp payments. So I made a payment of each for 2 years. Then in 2007, it came to a stop where I could not make any more payments. And I was refunded 1 year. And my other check for my deferred comp to this day has been held hostage by Milwaukee County, which is in excess of $10,000. And I don't know if I will ever get that or if I'll be in a wheelchair or 6 feet under. Is there any closure to this? Will I be able to buy those 2 years? Or I understand it's an ERS issue, but from talking to Mark Grady's office, even to the county exec, HR, I've spoken with people. Nobody has gotten back to me. Or if I'm collecting interest in how much, I'm in a standstill. And it's very upsetting and very stressful. I drive a 15-year-old car, and that money sure could come in handy one way or another for my future. And I'm trying to put a stepdaughter through a double master's for college. And this is my dilemma. Thank you.
Thank you. Steve Gazalka, followed by Todd Ludor.
Hello, my name is Steve Kozalka. I just want to reiterate all the things that my fellow retirees have stated here. I did say something at the last meeting that you had. So I'm not going to speak much longer, but if you just listen to everybody, it's important, and I think I just want to make one thing clear. I think Supervisor Smith made a good point. We got to move forward on this. We got to get this done. A lot of people's lives are really going through some difficult times right now. Thank you.
Thank you. Todd Ludor. I didn't check the call. What's that? Oh, I'm sorry. Registered but not speaking. Registered in favor of the ordinance changes but not speaking. Also First District. George McKinnon. Also registered but not speaking. Registered in favor of the ordinance changes. Also First District. Jeff Weber was registered but not speaking in favor. I believe he had to go to work. Also registered in favor on the amendment by Johnson. Final card is from Jeff Sweetland, speaking in favor. If there are others, blue cards are at the back. You can fill them out and pass them up to this clerk.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and supervisors. I am the attorney for five retirees who are among the 12 or 13 listed as not eligible. And the reason they were listed as not eligible was because they completed their purchases of the prior service credits after they had left county service. And why did they leave when they did? Because the first one, Beatrice Trapp, she had started with the county back in 1953. And then she left for a period of time after she got married, started raising a family, which is what women did all the time back in the 1950s. And she came back in 1967. It was under an emergency appointment as a nurse at County Hospital because they were desperate for nurses. For whatever reason, she wasn't converted to a regular appointment until 3 years later. She opted for the early retirement incentive program in 1990 under Ordinance Section 4.25 and said, I want to purchase whatever time is available. And she was told, well, you'll have to wait until this lawsuit, the Marty lawsuit, is concluded. And that wasn't concluded until 7-8 months after she retired. And it was several more months after that, more than a year after she retired, that she got the 90-day notice from Jack Amaral saying you can purchase 2.5 more years if you do so within 90 days, which she did. She gets a letter on July 31st, 2014, saying that was not lawful. That was improper because you didn't complete the purchase before you left county service. And therefore, we're reducing your benefits going forward from $1,731 down to $1,491, so a reduction of $240. And we want you to pay back $79,969. She is 81 years old. She is diabetic. She is nearly blind. She's not here because she can't walk. Penny Schaefer and Cheryl Miller worked at the lab, in the clinical lab at the county hospital. They were still working for the county when Mr. Amaral sent his notice out in November of 1991 saying anybody who wants to purchase prior service time, whether it's buy-in or buy-back, with a 5% interest rate, get your applications in now before December 31st. They both did. Their problem was that the county had already contracted with Freightert to transfer the lab in which these two employees worked to United Regional Medical Services, which is now DynaCare, as of January 1st, 1992. So because they were still doing the same work that they'd been doing before, but it was now a different employer. And so when they got their notices saying that here's what you need to do to buy your prior service, they paid for it. But when their letters came in June of 2014, those letters said, guess what? Your purchases are no good, and because those your purchases are no good, you are not entitled to any retirement benefit. Ms. Schaefer started in, she first worked for the county back in 63. She left, just as Ms. Trapp had, to raise a family. And so she's now 73 years old. Her pension benefit was $560. Now it's zero. And she was told that she needed to repay $90,754. Helen Schmidt, who's right here behind me, She worked for, she was a nurse at Doyne. She asked, she had just under 25 years of service credited to her when she left. But she asked before she left, and she took the early retirement option under Ordinance Section 4.26. And she asked, well, do I have some time that I can purchase? And Jack Amaral said, yes, you can purchase just about a half a year. She said, fine, I'll purchase it. She made the purchase after Doyne closed and she was, you know, had retired. But in July of 2014, she gets a letter saying that purchase was no good. Well, you'd think, well, she bought half a year and she already had 25 years, so it must not be that much. What the letter said was that her benefit was going to be reduced from $2,400 a month down to $1,600 a month, or $800, one-third. And she had to pay back $222,941. Where that number came from, where those numbers came from, I have no idea. We've asked the pension, the retirement system, to explain it. We're still waiting for an answer. Anyway, amendment number one to ordinance file number 1531 would do nothing more than put people like these five individuals back into 1531 so they could be treated the same way as everybody else is under the proposed ordinance amendment, which we support as amended by amendment number one. Ms. Trapp would be covered by the reference to 201.24.4.25. Ms. Schaefer and Ms. Miller by the reference to people who left county employment to become employed by United Regional Medical Services. Ms. Schmidt, both by the reference to those who terminated to become employed by Freightert in conjunction with the sale of Doyne, and Ordinance Section 201.24.4.26, and Carol Schmeling, the fifth one, by the reference to those who left the county when Doyne closed to become employees of Freightert. I have nothing more. I don't know if Ms. Schmidt has anything that she would like to add to what I've already said. But thank you.
Thank you. Would you like to speak? And just when you're done, if you could fill out the blue card.
Come to take over my life. And I'm worrying about, will I have enough money to continue in my home? I lost my husband 2 years ago, so it's only my money now to take care of things. Thank you very much.
So
if
these individuals
get
are
her
not...
A blue card, just for the record, that's our process. So
okay.
We just have you fill out a card just because you have testified.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, that's all the public comment cards that I have. Supervisor Johnson, do you want to
yes.
The amendment?
Mr. Chairman, Attorney Sweetland just referenced Amendment 1 to Amendment 1. And he talked about the United Regional Medical Services operation that was a lab with Milwaukee County, but that lab was given to another entity, which eventually became DynaCare. He referenced the five individuals, and that this amendment would put those five individuals in good standing with respect to this system. having heard what he said, and as I said earlier about people getting information either from the ERS system, something they may have read, by word of mouth, that they went to Milwaukee County, paid thousands of dollars in most cases, and did what they did in good faith. So, Mr. Chairman, I move adoption of Amendment Number 1 to particularly to remedy the situation for those five individuals that Attorney Sweetland just referenced.
Okay. Thank you. Has Corp Counsel reviewed the amendment and outside counsel reviewed the amendment, and do you have an opinion on whether it's appropriate or not?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Sweetland did share it with our office, and I shared it with Mr. Huff. Without taking a position of advocacy, the form of the amendment, we have no objection to the form of the amendment. It does appear to accomplish the goal of including these five individuals into the ordinance amendments. I would add that, based on my review, there's actually a sixth individual who would be added, would be covered by this amendment. So what that does is it takes takes these six individuals out of the category of ineligible and puts them in the category of eligible and receive the same benefits of the ordinance amendments, leaving eight ineligibles.
Okay. And would it also effectively dispose of the litigation?
I assume so. I have not had that discussion, but I would assume so.
It resolves the claim that is the basis of that litigation, right? So,
assuming the IRS agrees with the ordinance amendments that are adopted, yes.
That's what I was going to say, Mr. Chairman. The IRS has not seen this, so IRS would need to approve this in due course in order for this to be effective.
Okay. Supervisor Mayo?
Yes, I got a... I'm trying to find that email that they said that y'all agreed along with this amendment. I want to just make sure that I understand that you both bought into this agreement. You thought it was a right agreement to do.
To form.
I'm just trying to be cautious. It's not our decision on whether it's the right thing to do.
Right.
It is appropriate as to form. I mean, it's legally appropriate, subject to the IRS approval.
Okay, thank you. I know I must have deleted this one. I know I wasn't reading. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. We have one other public comment. Amy Smith. Oh, I'm sorry. I need to get used to reading that column down there. I'm not used to people. So, registered but not speaking in favor of the ordinance changes.
He's from Hawk. Right?
Yes.
Okay, I did. All right.
Yes.
I did.
All right. I would entertain a motion for closed session.
Are we going to dispose of this amendment?
I thought that perhaps people would have questions in closed session that they'd want to ask.
Mr. Chairman, for notice of closed session, the committee may adjourn in the closed session under the provisions of Wisconsin Statute Section 19.18 sub 1 sub G for the purpose of the committee receiving oral written advice from legal counsel concerning strategy to be adopted with respect to pending or possible litigation with regard to the following matter. At the conclusion of the closed session, the committee may reconvene in open session to take whatever actions it may deem necessary. Mr. Chairman, I move to go into closed session.
Okay. The motion is for closed session. Attorney Bargren, is it an appropriate item for closed session?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Supervisors, it's an appropriate topic for closed session, and I recommend that you do go into closed session to discuss it.
Okay. Hearing that recommendation, the motion is for closed session.
Supervisors Haas?
Aye.
Mayo?
Aye.
Schmidt?
Aye.
Roma West?
Aye.
Jurczyk?
Aye.
Weddle?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Mr. Chairman?
Aye.
8 ayes, 0 noes. The motion to adjourn into closed session prevails.
Thank you. We will be in closed session. Any vote will occur in open session, so we will reconvene subsequently.